Welcome everyone to episode 35 of The Business of Sport. Like every week, myself, Amr Al-Houli, your host, and Mr. Rob Yao joins me on the show. How are you, Rob? How's things?
Right, how you doing? Good, another great week, and great to be on with you for episode 35.
You're in a very, you're in sunny Las Vegas, enjoying yourself?
I am having some time of leisure? I am in Las Vegas this week for a little business travel, but we're always here.
Absolutely. Big weekend in sport, especially the fight world. You know, when the UFC is on, it's always a big weekend of sport. UFC 292 in Boston, Sean O'Malley versus Aljamain Sterling was the headline pay-per-view event, pay-per-view card. Once again, sold out crowd, 18,139 people filled the TD Garden. The gate was impressive, $7.25 million. Listen to this. It is the highest gate in the arena's history that was not an NBA Finals or NHL Stanley Cup Finals matchup. Unbelievable. Look, I mean, Dana White's a Boston boy. He started in Boston. But even that, I mean, I was listening to his press conference after the fight, and he was saying how the city's filled with red and green wigs, people coloring their hair, O'Malley T-shirts. They reckon that it was that busy that they're doing an economic report now to find out the true financial impact on the city of Boston.
Well, you know, we talk about Dana White and UFC a lot on this podcast, but it's because, you know, every time, I mean, he's setting new standards. I mean, you know, he comes out, you know, highest grossing event that wasn't one of their anchor tenants playing in a championship. You know, Sean O'Malley's, I think, what, the second champion coming from the contender series.
Yes.
You know, again, something that Dana's very proud about just the opportunity that show does and how much he loves going in and watching those fights. But the contender championship fight was one of the best fights of the night. You know, so, you know, Dana White is, you know, golden, you know, he's got the golden touch right now. He's got the Midas touch. A lot of really good things going on. That fight was, you know, lived up to its billing and Sean O'Malley lived up to his billing. I mean, dangerous fighter, dangerous striker against a great champion that was formidable, and you know, that right hand put him, you know, changed his life, you know, for sure. And like you said, lots of colored wigs out there right now running around.
He was a huge underdog. I'll give you an interesting stat. Dana White, in his press conference again, which I love watching just as much as I love watching the fights, he asked his PR people, his media people, how many reporters are in this room? They told him 70. He goes, okay, how many of you tipped Sean O'Malley to win by knockout before the fight? How many do you think answered?
Oh, I'd say less than five in that room probably had him for a knockout.
One. Media guys who cover the UFC week in, week out, one reporter tipped O'Malley to win. One out of 70, right? He was a huge underdog. Everybody said, Sterling will get him, take him to the ground, and it's game over.
Right.
But not Irene. What did O'Malley do? His takedown defense was on point. Sterling tried time after time after time, and he caught him coming in. That punch that he came in with, he lunged in. He was trying to throw a big, I think it was a right hand, which he moved back on, and he caught him straight in. He was fully committed. So that's what we see here. We have seen the emergence of a new star. Sean O'Malley is one of the icons of UFC / pop culture, or whatever you want to call it. He's very popular in UFC circles, and he's very popular in mainstream social media, digital world circles, right? Now, my question to you is he the new face of the UFC?
He's certainly their next marketable champion for sure. And, you know, and Dana said as much. He goes, the kid is dynamic. He's got a great personality. They were trying to compare him to McGregor. And, you know, Dana was very quick to say, look, when Conor broke onto the scene, Conor brought Europe with him. He brought a whole new continent with him, for UFC. And O'Malley isn't bringing a continent, but what he is bringing an excitement to a division, and certainly, pardon the pun, but he's bringing color, a colorful champion to the table, much in the way that Conor was during his rise, willing to talk, willing to chirp, engaging with media. He's not reserved. Sean O'Malley is what you, and you know, look, props to he's an Arizona boy from Glendale. So, we're celebrating our home state guy too at the same time. But having a champion that's skilled and talented is one thing. Much like Ali. Ali was skilled and talented. Man, he was much more masterful as the promoter and as the character and the charismatic guy that he was. And that's one of those things that O'Malley has. Whether and to your point, if he lost that fight, he was still going to be that Karamaz. He was still going to be a guy that lurked in that division, was going to sell tickets and be a great fighter for UFC. Now he's a champ. Now you got to come get him and get him on his terms. This is going to be fun. And certainly, look, Dana White, I like you like to watch his press conferences. And the first thing people are asking is so who's he fighting next? And Dana's like, man, we just got finished with this one. I hadn't even gotten into the war room yet to figure out the next fight. Exactly. He's great at dodging that question. But you and I both know he's already got the next fight figured
out. Guaranteed.
He's playing chess. But it's great to see him kind of keep the UFC media at bay. He is certainly one of the next stars of UFC, and his next several fight defenses, assuming that he wins his next one and after that are going to be sellout. They're going to be big fights. They're going to be massive.
He said a few more things that this was, trending to be the highest grossing pay-per-view at bantamweight ever. So this guy can sell, no problems. One of the other observations that I picked up on is the UFC really ever show the knockout, the highlights of the fight or the full fight. They aired O'Malley's full fight. They aired the finish. They aired multiple different things that they don't usually do.
Multiple angles of that.
Exactly. Exactly. What does that tell you?
Well, that obviously that was a big finish for that fighter, and they're like, this is a talented kid that took down the guy that everybody thought was the unbeatable. And so, as you said, they are always been very protective of the shot. How many times the ESPNs show you the grappling, and then it's a still shot of the punch getting thrown but not landed. And then, but this one, I think Dana White is a very smart man. And he said, hey, I'm going to let all y'all that didn't pay for this, I'm going to let you see what you missed. Because you know what you're going to do next time Sean O'Malley's fighting? You're buying the damn fight. Absolutely. You're buying it. You're buying the whole thing.
Absolutely. And it's going to trend. That's going to trend online on all digital platforms. One other thing that we also observed from that fight night is that O'Malley now is, if you listen to the Boston crowd, he's not a Boston native. The crowd were going ballistic. It was like his home state. They were cursing Sterling. They were going off, and they were obviously Boston's. The Bostonians are known for that, But the way that happened was unbelievable. The crowd were really behind him. It was like it was his home state. And this guy is such a marketable character. I think, honestly, he brings a different age demographic to the sport. And like I said to you, he brings that pop culture, that online world, the online community, that streaming community, that community there into the UFC. So for me, those highlights, that's why they were released. We had streamers commentating the fight everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and again, the fact that he is a champion that, you know, that arose from the Contender Series. So there's a lot of people that saw Sean O'Malley from day one, you know, his journey, you know, they can go back, you know, and if you didn't, you can go back and watch that Contender Series, you know, when he fought in there. So, I mean, again, you know, the brilliance of UFC and Dana White is that this is a champion that's self-made. It's that, for that, sure. You know, that is homegrown, if you will,
for sure,
within the UFC, you know, from a Contender Series all the way to a championship belt. You know, he's got a, you know, a long history ahead of him with UFC as a champion and as a fighter and as you know, someone that, you know, they're going to hold up on a pedestal of showing them this is how we build our brand, you know, organically, internally, as much as we do, you know, getting fighters from other parts of the world or maybe from other, you know, fighting leagues where they maybe cut their teeth and all of a sudden they became, you know, much, a little bit, they wanted to step up to the big leagues. And, you know, Dana White is always happy to unify in that way as well. So,
and as we were saying off air about a different fighter, he's putting the machine behind him now. He's putting the machine behind him.
That's right. And Dana White is the ultimate machine. Any fighter that's in UFC knows that, and Dana said this in one of his press conferences too, is that, you know, anybody that gets a title shot has earned that title shot.
100%.
I mean, he's not manufacturing a guy to fight three or four or five tomato cans championship. Those guys are all fighting like real deal fights. I mean, and you got the BMF belt out there too. So you got guys that could be champions that are fighting for a belt that just made it up and people are watching and it's a feature fight. I mean, you know, with
the Contender Series.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
alone is now attracting tens of millions of views around the world. So fighters are coming in there with their profiles being built before they go into the actual UFC.
Yep.
Automatically, their profiles are changing and increasing and becoming more popular just by fighting on the Contender Series. So the infrastructure they have in place is amazing. Nobody comes close. I know people say one championship in PFL, whatever. They've still got a long way to go.
Yeah.
All right, enough about the UFC and Dana. We love what they're doing, but we need to keep going. Another icon that we've spoken about a lot, actually, in the last few weeks since he's come to Miami, Lionel Messi, Leo Messi. Wow.
Yeah.
This guy is he's either he's the luckiest guy in the world or either he's just got that Midas touch, Rob. He's come to Inter Miami, a team that's last in the MLS, actual in the Pro League. They're playing in this League's Cup, right? Before he came, the atmosphere was flat. The attitude looked really flat, right? Because, you know, look where you're coming from. This guy has put this spark in this team now. Their confidence is sky high. Even that final, they were unlucky not to finish the game. That chip at the end. Yeah. And then look who scored the winning penalty, the goalkeeper. He saved the other keeper, then he scored the winning goal. That team now, right now, is flying. They are in the clouds, right? And what a difference one legend can make to a team.
Well, you know, Messi alone certainly changed, you know, was a cultural change. But, you know, I don't lose sight of the fact that they've added Alba and Busquets as well to that club, but it starts at the top with Messi, and I think, you know, there was when it happened, you know, when they won the League's Cup over the weekend, there, you know, obviously Messi was spectacular on the field, you know, scoring the first goal in spectacular fashion. But at the end of the game, you know, you think of all that this man has accomplished on the pitch. He's accomplished everything. World Cups, you know, champions in multiple leagues, Champions League trophies, Ballon d'Ors. I mean, he's won it all, right?
Everything.
But his awareness of what his team needs, right? They win the first trophy in this club's history. He's wearing the captain's armband and has been since he took the field, in the 52nd minute of the first match against Cruz Azul. They win this trophy, you know. You know, soccer tradition is that the trophy is handed to the team captain to take to the team to celebrate. Lionel Messi has every right to be the guy to lift that up. I mean, he's the catalyst. Lionel Messi's like, this is not mine. There is someone else that's been the captain of this team a lot longer than I have. He takes that armband and he points across the stage to Yeldon, says, come here. We're lifting this together. You're the captain of this team too. You're also the captain. You're the captain of this club. And collectively they accept the trophy from Don Garber and take it over to the team to celebrate. You know, though, there is a masterclass for all the young athletes out there. I don't care how talented you are. If you don't have, I mean, there is a locker room of players that are ready to run through walls for Lionel Messi. They've learned and all watched him, you know, perform at a high level as a professional. But now they're seeing how the best player in the world treats teammates and how aware he is of his surroundings, in the sense like he could have said, "Yeah, I'm the captain now, and sorry, Yeldon, you don't get to be part of this." No. He made sure that the captain of that team, before he got there, was part of raising that first trophy too. And that's just one of those things that there's a lot of talented players out there in the sports world that miss that opportunity to share, to create a moment, but more importantly, to galvanize an organization. And now Inter Miami may still be sitting in last place in MLS. They are a dangerous organization right now on the field. Dangerous. Because sure. They all now think that they are unbeatable. And as of right now, they are. They've got a game tomorrow night against Cincinnati in the U.S. Open Cup semifinals. But, you know, belief in yourself and belief with the talent that they now have and the aggressive nature that the front office is now taking in going out and, you know, attracting other players or aggressively going after other players, whether it's Suarez, whether it's Ramos, whether it's, they're looking at an Argentinian striker or a defender from Santos. Now, I mean, they are now, everybody is walking around with a puff chest, a skip in their step. Everybody is moving at a totally different level and pace now that Lionel is there. And again, not that it wouldn't have been a celebratory moment had he taken the trophy and walked it over there. They would have celebrated the same. But he basically he turned the volume up to 11, you know, if you will, to borrow something from Spinal Tap. He turned it up another notch by including Yeldon in a way to where that team just was like, oh, hell yeah. Oh, hell yeah. And not only is he our guy, but he will lead us to places that we never thought we could ever go. I mean, he's elevated Robbie Taylor. He's elevated, you know, the young American Argentinian striker. I mean, everybody around them is now playing at a much higher level. It's fun to watch because of theater, but it's intriguing as hell. And with that happening on U.S. soil with Copa America and World Cup, you know, coming down the road, I mean, it's just putting us in a, you know, it's a great time to be in the sports business. It's a great time to be alive. I mean, inner Miami fan or not, MLS fan or not, you can't help but watch. I mean, it's must see TV, and our friends at Apple are capitalizing hand over fist on it. Adidas is selling jerseys left and right. And right now, inter Miami is the ticket in MLS. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's grown Apple's appetite to have a look at ESPN. From what I've heard recently is that there's conversations out there that are saying that Apple could be, or Bob Iger's engaged Apple in having discussions about purchasing ESPN.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, it's been a perfect storm for sure. But it is what it has demonstrated is, you know, what you and I talk about every week, and we know from being in the business is that, man, sports is a powerful elixir, and it is an accelerant. It is a revenue generator, and when it is clicking and things are aligned, wow, the results and yes, look, Apple struck, you know, had a deal with, look, they took a risk with MLS and look, they were able to take that leap a little bit because some of their sports related programming was successful, and, you know, tip of the cap a little bit to Ted Lasso that, you know, it created an interesting buzz. I don't think that when they started that series that they thought Nike would come to them and say, we want to be in on the kit so that we can actually have a merchandising deal with you to sell AFC Richmond gear.
Okay, that's unbelievable.
I mean, you know, I don't think that was anywhere in the script, you know, in coming up with that, right? And then you have that momentum and you go, okay, maybe we're onto something with this soccer thing. We can't go get the Premier League. All right, we've got MLS, and MLS is in the middle of looking. Okay, we can do a pay-per-view deal, but, you know, we want to kind of look at this. Wow, Amazon kind of jumped in with the NFL. Okay, Netflix is in on, you know, the drive to survive a little bit. So, you know, so we take another step, and they do. Okay, and then the greatest player in the world shows up, right? And not only does he show up, but he shows up mid-season, coming off holiday. He's in preseason form, and he's scoring goals. He's winning games. He is doing it in dramatic fashion. He is, you know, come from behind wins, and, you know, ratings are off the charts. Subscriptions are going through the roof. Every time he scores a goal, it becomes a Guinness Book of World Records for the most video clip viewed in the world. Wow. I mean, it's again, we've talked about, we've got a client that's on the front of that shirt that is getting exposure worldwide. We're running out of numbers. You know, we're just kind of, you know, we're putting more commas every time on what the impressions and the value of what they have gotten in six games, seven games. Wow. You know, it's exceeded every expectation. But we all, I think all of us, you know, knowing there's a game tomorrow, I don't know if we can be surprised, but I guarantee you he's going to do something that's going to surprise us. and we, you know, and look, MLS is, you know, enjoy it. While, enjoy this, enjoy every minute of it. Because, this is one of the more historic debuts in league history. So this is a lot of fun to have a personal relationship, a professional relationship to it, and then just as a fan and just go, wow.
It is kind of a
Hollywood script in some ways. And you and I both know that there's a, you know, Apple is already doing the documentary on his arrival. So, you know, they have doubled down and doubled down and doubled down. And so
for sure,
man, we're in Vegas. So they have split the aces, and they're taking a hit and they're ready to go.
100%. And I think there's more to come. There's more greatness to come, but we'll keep going. We'll stay on the topic of football. The Women's World Cup has come to an end. Record TV numbers, record revenue numbers. We'll share some of the numbers. 14.46 million people tuned in to the final in England on BBC and ITV. 12 million viewers. The Women's World Cup final becomes the BBC's second most viewed event of 2023. Following the coronation of King Charles III in May. In Spain, an average audience of 5.6 million people tuned in for the game, with free-to-air broadcaster RTV gaining an audience share of 65.7%. Not bad. The World Cup as a whole has been a game changer for Aussies, Australia being one of the host nations, Australia and New Zealand hosted. FIFA, the local broadcaster Seven, believes they reached 18.6 million Australians across the tournament on the screens of Seven, which is the broadcast name, the local broadcaster. Massive numbers, massive stats. The revenue of the whole tournament was a highest ever, $570 million. Great numbers. Well done. Great tournament. I personally did not follow, but we've seen huge, because I'm currently in Australia, we've seen huge momentum around this tournament. It was in every single paper, every single media outlet, every single second, every second billboard. Like, they really, the governments really invested here locally in pushing this World Cup. Now, one of the conversations that's come up is, again, pay equality. And for those of you who believe that there needs to be pay equality, I'm going to share some numbers of the men's tournament that happened in Qatar at the end of 2022. The men's tournament generated $6.7 billion US dollars in revenue. The men's final was watched by over 2.5 billion people, I believe, or around that number. The broadcasts of some of the games were in the tens of millions. The economic impact was in the tens of billions of dollars as well to the host nation, which is Qatar. Over 4.5 million people visited. Australia, 1.5 million people visited, or 1.5 million tickets were sold. So with all due respect, we need sometimes in life, we need to look at the facts, not the airy fairy facts and the dreams and our entitlement, what we believe is entitlement. We need to sit down and look at hardcore business, what makes sense business-wise. And I believe the pay equality conversation should not even be a conversation at the moment. I believe that the women's organizers, the women's tournaments organizers, need to put more effort into attracting more people You know how many Italian reporters were at the FIFA World Cup in Qatar? 40. You know how many were in Australia? Zero. What does that tell you? Right. So let's look at the numbers, look at the facts, and start comparing the two, even though we should never compare, because at the end of the day, everyone has their own league. We should back the two leagues and help them grow and invest the time and effort to get them to a level where they can ask for this pay equality. But what's happening right now is unrealistic entitlement has become the theme of the world. So anyway, that's my 5 cents.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, congratulations to, you know, the organizers in Australia and New Zealand for, you know, putting on a fantastic tournament. You know, obviously those numbers indicate, you know, a successful endeavor, you know, both from viewership, revenue. They've got a great new champion in Spain, one that looks very, you know, poised to sit atop that perch for a while. The rest of the world is now, you know, needs to catch up with the lady Spaniards. You know, so, you know, overall, I mean, obviously, you know, when a host nation, you know, advances to the Final Four and guarantees themselves, you know, two more games, you know, in a semifinals and a third place game or potentially a championship, it bolsters, you know, what can happen, you know, locally as well. But, you know, overall, I mean, I thought that the, you know, there was a time there where they were concerned about hitting, you know, that half billion dollar projection, and they hit it and exceeded it. So, you know, that's good that they got there. You know, as it relates to, you know, some of the, you know, the viewership numbers, I mean, obviously, you know, UK, you know, extraordinarily passionate behind the Lionesses, you know, given their run in the Euros and obviously here to the World Cup, had obviously, you know, some very high profile supporters, namely some guy named Beckham, who just so happens to be in the news a lot lately, as we talked about in the previous segment. His club's doing very well, and so he's very prominent, but and was very vocal and supportive of the Lionesses during their run. You know, obviously, you know, the a fantastic, you know, two global powers in Spain and England in a final. You know, unfortunately, the reigning champ, two-time defending reigning champs, were home working, you know, focusing on other agendas. Hopefully, an agenda that is about getting a new coach and getting refocused on being the best in the world, but more importantly, you know, getting refocused on you know, getting back to the game, that what made them successful and gave them the voice and the platform, and it was winning. And they got away from that. And I think, you know, the topic of equal pay, I think one of the things is that the breakdown shouldn't be, I think it should be a percentage of what you earn. And you share the kind of the comparison of the numbers to what the Men's World Cup, almost 10 times the viewers, 10 times the revenue, the viewers, you know, eight, nine times viewership, which obviously translates, you know, to the incremental dollars. The men on a percentage basis are getting much less of that number. The women are getting a much larger percentage share of the revenue that they generate in the, you know, for the Women's World Cup. So at some level, you know, if you're comparing, you know, this is an apples and oranges, but if you're comparing the earning of each of the teams, I think if I recall correctly, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think like the men were getting 7% of the revenue and the women kind of get into the 20 percentile. I mean, that's significant. I mean, if the men were getting 20% of $6 billion, I mean, obviously the numbers would be just stupid, right? I mean, but the women are getting a larger percentage. I think with anything, I think, you know, the percentages should be comparable. There should be, you know, incentives for and performance for advancing and for winning and all those kinds of things. But, you know, it's the same conversation we have when we get back here and we're talking about WNBA or WPSL or whatever. I am a huge supporter of women's sports and I want to see it grow and flourish. But the WNBA is a league that loses money, and it wouldn't exist if the NBA didn't fund it. Okay. And yet you have athletes who are tremendous athletes. You know, do I think their wages should go up? Yeah, absolutely. I think they should. But compare yourself to an NBA franchise and say, we should be getting charter flights and we should be getting this, that, and the other. Like, you don't generate the revenue. You know, they're giving away tickets for noon games, you know, at some level. And I say that, you know, with all the support of saying, I want you to get everything you earn. You know, it's, you know, get what you earn. If you want to make an exciting product and more companies are going to invest and sponsor you and generate more money, then you should get as the athlete or the talent, you should get more. Absolutely. 100%. But I don't think that you should use the men to compare, you know, your earning potential, because it's two different things. And
100%.
There's women's sports. Obviously there is a lot of discussion about biological men finding their way into women's sports. And I'm glad we don't spend a lot of time talking about it here, but I would much rather see women excel in their sports and earn accordingly. But let's not get on a soapbox and say that because, you know, the men are losing in the round of 32 and the women were two-time world champs, that all of a sudden there's equal pay, because it, you know, one, different leagues, different talent levels, different tournaments. But for where you and I sit, it's looking at a business and an economical decision. You know, we wouldn't make this decision if we were running a business. Why does this need to be factored in when federations are trying to run a business as well?
A global business, literally.
A global business. Exactly. I mean, you don't see, women playing in the English Women's Premier League getting paid the same wages that players, that are playing for Man City. You know, the women for Man City and the women for Man United and the women for Arsenal are not getting paid at the same rate, weekly wages that the men are. They're not. You know why? Because the revenue is different. TV contracts, sponsorships, sales, et cetera.
Very different. And just to clarify, I said 2.5 billion, 1.5 billion viewers for the Men's World Cup final. And just so people have a bit of an insight on how much of a difference there is, 550 million people tuned in for the game of Ecuador, the opening game, Ecuador versus Qatar. 550 million people, right? That's ridiculous. So this conversation of comparing really needs to disappear. We need to go back to the drawing board and say, how do we help women's sport prosper, thrive, and do its best, right? And work that way. Stop the comparison. Stop this noise. Stop these agendas that are being pushed by these interesting characters. Focus on the growth of the sport and work in silence and build. That's the most important thing.
I totally appreciate the passion. But it's funny that passion is quite muted when it comes to a biological male setting a women's weightlifting award or a swimmer. Where is the same passion and enthusiasm that is there for equal pay in women's sports and men's sports? But you won't protect your women's sports from biological male show. I mean,
Shout out to Riley Gaines. She's definitely a soldier. She's fighting the fight, and
she's Martina Navratilova, you know, has supported her. I mean, there, Caitlyn Jenner is right there with her, you know, as certainly someone who represents that, you know, that community. It's like, I can't imagine, you know, the trauma, et cetera, some of those female athletes have been exposed to. But more importantly, it's about just the integrity of sport in general. I mean, you know, level playing fields are what, you know, really determine, you know, athletic integrity. And, you know, we've dealt with this with, you know, used to enhance performances and all those kinds of things. And testosterone going through puberty as a man is a huge advantage when it comes to, you know, 10 years down the road when you decide you want to, you know, change genders and then compete as a woman. We don't, you know, don't want to get down that rabbit hole, but I go back to, where is the passion and enthusiasm and ferocity to protect your women's sport in that vein that exists when we're talking about, you know, equal pay? And again, equal pay is the wrong term. It's you should achieve the maximum value, you know. And so, like, if the women win the World Cup, they should win percentage of the revenue than a men's team that doesn't advance beyond the group stage kind of thing. I'm totally behind all that, you know, but the dollars that the tournaments that they play in, that they generate, dictate that the, you know, 7% for the men versus 20% for the women is a significant financial difference.
For sure. It's madness. But anyway, we will keep going. One league that we continuously talk about is the Saudi Pro League. They continue to sign players. They continue to do deals. Last week on the show, we made a prediction that the Saudi Pro League will have teams that will compete in the Champions League. Literally the next day, news came out about Saudi Arabia talking to UEFA about having a team from Saudi Arabia playing in the Champions League. I mean, we knew it because we see and understand the trends. I just can't believe that people thought that was some ludicrous idea, because that's sport.
Well, again, we've talked about the Saudi investment into sport in general, and they're in it to win it. You know, this is not a charity mission. They are as sportsmen, they like to compete at the highest level, whether it's horse racing, motorsport, soccer, golf, cricket, they are in it to win it and in it to make a difference, to be a positive difference. And, you know, the direction that they've taken with their domestic league, first with the move to get Ronaldo over there to play, and then subsequently Benzema and Kanye and a few others that are now coming, heighten the quality of the league. Here in the U.S., MLS, what did we do in the early days? Hey, we got a Wayne Rooney coming over in his twilight years. We're getting David Beckham to come over here, and Ibrahimovic, and we're getting guys that have been stars in the top leagues, getting them over here so that we can get more eyeballs.
Exactly.
They no different than what the Saudi League is doing, and you know they're doing it now at a much higher clip. Now they are making strong financial incentives to come over there. I mean, the pomp and circumstance around his transport arrival, and then obviously the details of his contract have been all well documented. But at the end of the day, you don't do this just to have a good Saudi domestic league. You know, this is about to move up. This is about getting to the next level. And yes, you know, as someone who is, as people in this business, you're damn right. If they keep adding talent to their league and the quality and the level of play is moving up, and more importantly, you know, financially, they're seeing, you know, TV deals and more exposure in their league, you know, you're damn right that they should have, you know, the champion of their league should have a spot in Champions League, because there are leagues, much smaller leagues than the Saudi league, with much less money being spent on the talent. In some cases, the money they paid one player is the money that's paid for an entire league roster, that sends a team to Champions League. So don't tell me that they are not worthy of it, given their commitment to the game. And look, we talk about business here. UEFA is a business. You don't think that Aramco or some of the other companies that are owned by the PIF, brands, that is, don't Red. Find their way into a global relationship with UEFA as part of a much bigger deal that says, hey, they're a new global partner. And oh, by the way, there's a new spot opened up in the Champions League that's coming out of the Saudi League. And again, the objective is, when that team gets in there, don't get run out of it in the first round. Be competitive. Go win, or at least be competitive.
That's why they're investing this money.
And they're investing this money to send teams that have a Ronaldo that has played at a high level. The Benzemas of the world. I mean, obviously they are creating their own levels of super teams there. We're watching Inter Miami right now, right? Who last place in the league has gone on a run and now won a League's Cup championship, has qualified for CONCACAF, and now just got an invitation to Copa America. What did they just get invited? They just got invited by the Argentinian Federation to go play in Copa America.
Yeah,
I mean,
like the club championship. Yeah.
Less than two months ago, I mean, they were dead in the water.
Oh, it's missing now. So.
Well, again.
Imagine the fan base.
Alba and Buquets, but what has the Saudi League added in the same time? They've added Ronaldo. They've added Benzema. They've added
Mane.
Now Neymar.
Neymar, Mane, Mitrovic from Fulham in his peak, literally killing it in the thing.
Right. Equally talented players are arriving in that league. And look, we're marketers here. Let's come up with an idea and share it with the fans and say, hey, I am all for an MLS Saudi League, World Cup challenge. Let's take their top four and our top four, and let's go. Let's play that thing, and let's have some fun.
They'll build stadiums for it.
I mean, I'm all for these, intercontinental global competitions, especially when we're both kind of doing the same thing, right?
You're pretty much saying Ronaldo versus Messi.
Well, you know what? That's good TV, my friend.
And 100%.
You and I both know that just like Dana White does when he gets in the war room and puts together a fight, he goes, somebody's going to pay to watch that. And where we can create that, that's great TV. It's great theater. And more importantly, the cultural impact that a match like that would have, given the world that we live in today, right?
Yeah.
What kind of message would that send out? How sports can unify, fan bases, it can unify leaders, et cetera. I mean, it can be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Speaking of the PIF brands, Visit Saudi has agreed to a 20 million euro per year La Liga sponsorship. It's about $21 million US as a key partner. The partnership will involve a series of activities starting with a high-profile launch event in Saudi Arabia. Not much has been shared in terms of the deal, but this is another big move. Another Saudi brand or, you know, getting out there, making a splash in the world of football. La Liga, I'd say, is the third biggest football league in the world. I'd say the Premier League and then the Bundesliga and then La Liga. And look at that, man. They're making moves everywhere. They continue to make moves.
Yeah, well, you know, look, it follows Riyadh Air's, you know, kit partnership with Atletico Madrid,
yep.
The flagship airline. Yep. You know, so that, you know, so a natural follow-up, you know, for Saudi tourism to visit Saudi to partner with the league. So it's a great way to kind of, you know, activate that relationship. Hey, we have an airline that flies from your destinations to our country. And here's the tourism. We've seen a lot of that, you know, in the EPL, lots of, you know, governmental tourism partnerships with those clubs. We've seen Rwanda and a few others, you know, ending
Qatar, Etihad, Emirates, Turkish Airlines.
This is not new. This is a very coordinated effort, and so
it's a strategic move, especially
the two
sponsorships of the league, and one of the bigger teams is Spain. Clearly, there's appetite there for Saudi Arabia by the Spanish. There must be.
And if there's not one, they are damn committed to create it. You know, to the tune of, you know, 40 to 50 million euro a year with those collective partnerships. And, you know, there you have it. You know, let's keep an eye on what the next deal is.
That's less than an hour's work, my friend.
Yes. My friend over there does have the hourly calculations on how much one oil well in Saudi Arabia takes to pay for sponsorship deal. But, you know, again, you know, we say that tongue in cheek, but at the end of the day, you know, they have unlimited resources and are committed to elevating their country and their culture in a positive way, utilizing sports as the platform.
Absolutely. All right, back to the States now. This is a big deal, actually, in my opinion. YouTube have teamed up with FanDuel. For all of you that follow the NFL and live on this earth, everyone knows who FanDuel is. They're a gambling betting company. This is a huge deal, in my opinion. This continues to set the precedence of deals that we've been seeing over the last few weeks, one with Penn and ESPN, YouTube teaming up with FanDuel, another big one. FanDuel and DraftKings were the two big ones. And now we've seen Fanatics come in, and Penn's also a big player, but they're getting a bit more aggressive with their deal with ESPN. But let's go through this deal. So between the 21st of August and the 18th of September, new FanDuel Sportsbook customers who place a $5 bet will receive $200 in bonus bets and $100 off NFL Sunday ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. It's pretty generous, because I don't think anybody's going to place a $5 bet and not continue to bet. I think it's going to end up a bit more than that.
Yeah.
And then existing FanDuel customers who bet $5 will receive $100 off NFL Sunday ticket. FanDuel to also launch FanDuel Explore betting product for fans. What's your take? This is your world.
Well, you know, look, obviously YouTube taking over the NFL ticket from DirecTV, you know, looking for a synergistic, you know, activation partner, and FanDuel being, you know, deeply embedded in the fantasy game, but now, you know, more importantly, the betting, natural for them to create a partnership given their new asset, right? And it, look, it makes a lot of sense. Incentivizes those pot committed customers for FanDuel that are and certainly those new ones that they're attracting.
They're about to suck in.
That they're ready to suck in on their betting platform.
$5 bets
for $5. You get we know you're a fan. We know you're an NFL fan. And oh, by the way, what does a betting fan want to know? Information. And what does a betting fan want to know? They want to be watching where their money is and what the games that their money is on. And how can you do that? NFL ticket. NFL ticket, red zones are the gamblers' eyes to their money. They either want to see it fly out the window or they want to see it, double in front of them. And they want to, and at the end of the day, they want to yell at someone for making a catch or dropping a ball or whatever. And, we talk about, perfect marriages and sync, things that sync up. I mean, this is just one of those partnerships when that deal changed hands from DirecTV over to YouTube, that you got to find a strategic partner, and whether it was DraftKings or FanDuel, it was going to be someone in that space. And this is just, those two, businesses, aligning, and it's the old, 1+1=3 kind of relationship.
Absolutely. All right. Let's see how that plays out, which brings us to the end of our show. It's been quite an interesting one. Lots to talk about, lots of interesting points, lots of little gems and nuggets from our friend Rob here. Absolute pleasure, Rob. Thank you very much for joining me again for episode 35. And on to the next one. Take care, everyone.
On to the next one. And greetings from Las Vegas.
Greetings from Melbourne, Australia, everyone. Take care. We'll catch you all next week.